Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Narayanam Namaskritya.
Narayanam Namaskritya.
Naram Chaiva Narottamam. Devim Sarasatim Vyasam.
Devim Sarasatim Vyasam.
Tato Jayam Udirayet.
Tato Jayam Udirayet.
Nasta Praeshu Abhadreshu.
Nasta Praeshu Abhadreshu.
Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya.
Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya.
Bhagavati Uttama Shloke.
Bhagavati Uttama Shloke.
Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki.
Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki.
This morning we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 2, entitled Divinity and Divine Service, text number 9. Dharmasya,
Dharmasya
hi,
hi
apavargasya,
apavargasya.
Dharmasya hi apavargasya,
Dharmasya hi apavargasya.
Dharmasya hi apavargasya,
Dharmasya hi apavargasya.
Nartho,
Nartho
Rithayopakalpate,
Rithayopakalpate.
Narto Rithayopakalpate,
Narto Rithayopakalpate.
Nartasya,
Nartasya.
Dharmaikantasya,
Dharmaikantasya.
Nartasya Dharmaikantasya,
Nartasya Dharmaikantasya.
Kamo,
Kamo.
Labhaya,
Labhaya.
Smritaha,
Smritaha.
Kamo labhaya hi smritaha,
Kamo labhaya hi smritaha.
Dharmasya hi apavargyasya,
Dharmasya hi apavargyasya.
Nato ratayo pakalpate,
Nato ratayo pakalpate.
Nartasya dharmaikantasya,
Nartasya dharmaikantasya.
Kamo labhaya hi smritaha,
Kamo labhaya hi smritaha.
Dharmasya,
Dharmasya.
Occupational engagement.
Occupational engagement.
He,
he.
Certainly.
Certainly.
Apavargyasya,
Apavargyasya.
Ultimate liberation.
Ultimate liberation.
Na,
na.
Not.
Na.
Artaha,
Artaha.
End.
End.
Arthaya,
Arthaya.
For material gain.
Material gain.
Upakalpate,
Upakalpate.
Is meant for.
Is meant for.
Na,
na.
Neither.
Neither.
Artasya,
Artasya.
Of material gain.
Of material gain.
Dharma eka antasya,
Dharma eka antasya.
For one who is engaged.
For one who is engaged
in the ultimate occupational service.
In the ultimate occupational service.
Kamaha.
Kamaha.
Sense gratification.
Sense gratification.
Labhaya.
Labhaya.
Attainment of.
Attainment of.
He.
He.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Smritaha.
Smritaha.
Is described by the sages.
It is described by the sages.
Translation. All occupational engagements are certainly meant for ultimate liberation. They should never be performed for material gain. Furthermore, according to sages, one who is engaged in the ultimate occupational service should never use material gain to cultivate sense gratification. responsibly. All occupational engagements, are certainly meant for, ultimate liberation. They should never be performed, for material gain. Furthermore, according to sages, one who is engaged in the ultimate occupational service
should never use material gain
to cultivate sense gratification. Report by Srila Prabhupada. We have already discussed that pure devotional service to the Lord is automatically followed by perfect knowledge and detachment from material existence. But there are others who consider that all kinds of different occupational engagements, including those of religion, are meant for material gain. The general tendency of any ordinary man in any part of the world is to gain some material profit in exchange for religious or any other occupational service. Even in the Vedic literatures, for all sorts of religious performances, an allurement of material gain is offered, and most people are attracted by such allurements or blessings of religiosity. Why are such so-called men of religion allured by material gain? Because material gain can enable one to fulfill desires, which in turn satisfy sense gratification. This cycle of occupational engagements includes so-called religiosity followed by material gain, and material gain followed by fulfillment of desires. Sense gratification is the general way for all sorts of fully occupied men. But in the statement of Sutta Goswami, as per the verdict of the Srimad Bhagavatam, this is nullified by the present shloka. One should not engage himself in any sort of occupational service for material gain only, nor should material gain be utilized for sense gratification. How material gain should be utilized is described as follows. Dharmasya hi apavargyasya nartho rutai upakalpate nartasya dharmaikantasya kamulabhaya hi smitaha. All occupational engagements are certainly meant for ultimate liberation. They should never be performed for material gain. Furthermore, according to sages, one who is engaged in the ultimate occupational service should never use material gain to cultivate sense gratification. So, here the word apavargyasya is meant, it refers to liberation. The translation is ultimate liberation. And of course, ultimate liberation is to go back home, back to Godhead, to be liberated from any contact with the temporary material world. It's an interesting word because ah means not or extra, and pavargya. Pavarga is the first line of the Sanskrit alphabet. Pa-pa-ba-ba-ma. There are five letters, five syllables. Pa-pa-ba-ba and ma. So each one of them
is explained in terms of material life and basically they mean the entanglement of a person in material existence. Bha refers to bhaya or fear, and pa is pansa, or when someone works very hard, like a horse, especially if a horse works very hard, it foams at the mouth. So that foam is called pansa. So, anyway, the point is that ultimate liberation means to get free from all of the different kinds of activities in this material world, because material activities do yield fruit, but they're limited and temporary. People often, at least in Vedic culture, they worship different demigods. Therefore, sometimes people think that Hinduism, they think that what we're doing is, what we're practicing is Hinduism, and they think that Hinduism is pantheistic, that they worship many gods, but we don't worship many gods. In fact, there's only one supreme, eternal, Ekale, Ishwar Krishna, Arsabhritya. But there are jiva souls. They're not in the category of Vishnu, Tattva. Totally separate. They're infinitesimally small, as we are. But because of their devotion to Krishna, they've achieved some kind of position of responsibility, and therefore they are sometimes called demigods. The example is that of a government where you may have different ministers in charge of different functions. There's the water works minister, or the finance minister, or the minister in charge of defense minister, like that, different ministers. But they get their power from the prime minister. The prime minister is elected, and then he chooses his cabinet, his ministers. Or, of course, here you have a presidential system, but the principle is the same, that all the others get their power from the chief person in charge. So Krishna is the prime minister, and there's no one equal to him, no one greater than him. So sometimes people worship these demigods for the purpose of getting some material benefit. It is really, really rare to find someone who is intelligent enough to understand that the only solution is to get out of the material world altogether. You can't make a patchwork solution, as Prabhupada calls it. Sometimes you see, nowadays, of course, it has become a fashion. People like to wear blue jeans that have patches all over them, and you can actually buy brand new blue jeans that already have patches sewn in on them. That's become the fashion. But usually, formerly what happened was someone who was very poor, this is how the whole thing came about. Some hippies or some beatniks or whatever you want to call them. They would wear blue jeans, but and the blue jeans would get worn out, and when they didn't have money to buy a new pair because they kept themselves very poor, they would just take a patch and sew the patch on if there was some hole in the pants. And if another hole came in the pants, then they'd sew another patch on. And this was their solution. Obviously, the best thing is just to work a little bit and get some money and buy some new blue jeans. But they made a temporary patchwork. How long can you go on putting patches? But I guess some people got the idea that this was very fashionable, so they started selling blue jeans with patches on them. You can't do that in the material world. You can't just make stopgap solutions. You know, the famous story of the boy in Holland, and there's a dike that holds back the water, the flood water, but the dike develops a hole in it, a crack. You know that story? And the boy puts his finger in the crack to hold back the water. But how long can he hold back the water with his little finger in the crack in the dike? You know what a dike is? Along the edge of the ocean, they often have dikes to hold back waves and things. So, birth, death, old age, and disease, these are concomitant factors of the material world. They're part of the material world. You can't make death nice. Even if you have a big funeral or whatever it is, you can't make disease nice. You can have the best hospital in the world with nice air-conditioned rooms and very efficient doctors and nurses, but getting sick is all about misery. The doctors can't make your disease comfortable. And getting old, you know, you can put cream on till the sun goes down, but, you know, getting old means wrinkles all over your body, it means varicose veins, it means organs start to break down, liver and kidney and heart and everything. Old age is about suffering. And then there's rebirth. Birth is also about suffering. So, the only solution is to get liberation from this miserable place. We often give the example of the toilet. You don't spend a long time there. Trying to make the bathroom smell nice is really foolish endeavor. Or at least thinking that by putting a little camphor or a little incense or something, now you've created a nice place where you can spend a long time. Finish your business and get out. So the same way in the material world, we finish our business and get out. We shouldn't make plans to spend a long time in the material world. We should live each day as if tomorrow is our last day. We should never be confident that we will live any farther than today. Because there is danger at every step in the material world. It's a fact. At any moment, any one of us could be kicked out. And we've seen this again and again and again. We see it when it's splashed all over the newspapers. Then we come to know about it when great famous personalities die, and we thought they would never die. We thought that their stars were so bright that they would always be famous, they would always be popular, and they would go on living forever, and they would gradually just fade away, maybe. But when accidents happen, or when old age finally strikes the final blow and somebody dies, then we get a shock. But we shouldn't prepare ourselves to live in the, it's not surprising that someone dies. It's surprising that someone lives. There are so many ways in which people can die. There's so many miseries, whether it be war, or whether it be malnutrition, or whether it be disease, or whether it be by car accident, or whether it be any other kind of thing. There's so many ways in which people are killed in the material world. So here we are advised not to use our time and our energy for trying to make a permanent place in the material world. And believe me, it sounds like a simple thing, but the tendency is very strong to do it. There's no harm in making something for ourselves, but we should never be confident that it will last any longer than today. Trust not the future. Trust no past nor in the future dwell at all, but live with times that are with thee, and progress ye shall call. Nice poem by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So don't dwell in the past. Don't think of the past. The past is gone. And don't trust the future. You can't guarantee the future. Anything could happen. Krishna may have any plan for you. We make our plans, but Krishna has his plans. And we can never understand. The ways of the Lord are very mysterious, and we can't predicate, we can't imagine what Krishna will do in the next moment. So we shouldn't live in the future, but we should think about right now and how we're using all of our energy for Krishna's service. We have many occupational engagements. We have to work to maintain the body. That's obvious. You can't just become irresponsible. Arjuna, more or less, was, his activity was irresponsible. He wanted to run away and hide in the mountains. He thought that would solve his problem. I'll just go and meditate somewhere and maybe the difficulties will go away. But that was not the responsible thing. We have to work for our livelihood. We have to take care of our family. We have to take care of our health, we have to take care of our various needs, and we have various occupations, activities. But none of these should be used
as an opportunity to enjoy independently of Krishna. That's the point. All occupational duties, dharmasya, hi, apavargasya, nartho vritaya upakalpate, na artho, artha means profit or benefit. So there are pancha purusha artha, pancha purusha arthas, and they are religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, and ultimately liberation. And then, of course, the fifth one is devotional service. Dharma, artha, kama, moksha. These are the four main activities of people in the material world. These are ways that they fulfill their desires. Religiosity means some type of ritual, ritualistic worship in a church, temple, or mosque. Without being religious, truly religious, there's no question of peace. If people are insentient, or rather insensitive, not insentient, insensitive, if they don't recognize that there's a witness to their activities, that God is watching, you know, and that there is a law, that there is an absolute morality. If people aren't conscious of this, then they can do anything to their fellow men. We become simply brute animals. Religion gives us a little bit of sensitivity of others. It gives us a little bit of morality. The proper, there's some standard is there. We can't just invent or concoct. When people are, the farther people get away from God, the more they become animalistic. And it doesn't matter how educated they are. I remember a few years back, there was a debate in America on whether to allow or whether to distribute condoms in schools. So of course the debate was going on all levels of society, but they found that those from poorer sections of society, and mostly that was referred to the Hispanics, the Spanish-speaking people who had emigrated to the USA from Mexico and other countries in South America. And their population is quite large in America now. And blacks, Negroes, were traditionally poor. American apartheid. But these people tend to be much more religious. The what we call WASPs, white Anglo-Saxon Protestant. they're known as, anyway, the educated, highly educated. Most of these people were college educated. So they found that those who were college educated, the higher the degree of education, the less interested they were in some type of absolute moral less interested they were in morality, and the more interested they were in liberality and providing facility for children to enjoy sense gratification. And the more religious people were, the less sophisticated. The point is sophistication. Material, mundane knowledge brings a degree of sophistication that turns people away from God. If you go to Disneyland in America, in Florida, there's Disneyland in California, but the new, much newer Disneyland is in Florida, and there's the Disneyland where they have all the rides and everything, and then there's a big theme park, or not exactly theme park, it's a huge park where they have different exhibitions of different countries, their culture, and they have presentations of modern technology. It's called the Epcot Center. So the first exhibition that you go through is, maybe you've seen it, it's a giant silver ball, like a huge football. You may have seen that in pictures or something. Giant thing. And you get on a train that goes through it. A little train. And, you know, they take about, I guess, maybe 50 or 75 passengers up into the ball. The tracks go all around. And it's dark inside, but all along the train ride, on either side of the train, you're exposed to all these puppets, all these computerized robots. Not puppets, robots. And it starts... The whole idea is to show you the development of technology. And they start with what they consider, it's all based on Darwinian theory of evolution. And they show you the original animals on Earth. And then they show you prehistoric man. And then gradually they bring you to more and more civilized man. And then they bring you through a period when men were religious. And they show you a little bit about that, early settlers in America, the Quakers and the Puritans and other groups that were persecuted in England, and they came to America and discovered America or whatever, settled in America. Then gradually they start to tell you that as science developed answers to all the questions that religion posed, as science started to solve the problems of man, that gradually you're taught that we don't need religion, that it's just superstition, just meant for sentimental people. Science will now solve all your problems. And you go, it's a really fantastic exhibition. Very well done. You know, millions and millions of dollars spent on it. But the whole strategy is to brainwash people. And they're using their sophistication to steer people or engineer people away from God. So the more sophisticated we become in mundane scientific things, the farther we get away from God. And that's what that survey showed, with the debate over condoms in schools for children.
So this is wrong to try to use our occupational work and activities, to use the profit from our activities for sense gratification, because it leads to a civilization where more and more we become impersonal, more and more we become insensitive to others, more and more you see things like euthanasia. You know what is euthanasia? Yeah?
No.
Huh?
Euthanasia.
Huh? You know what it is? Mercy killing. Yeah? Euthanasia means that, you know, old people, they're not producing anything for society, and they're suffering a lot from diseases and things, so let's just kill them all. It's for their good and for ours too. Mercy killing, you know. The two words, actually, it's an oxymoron. Mercy and killing, they don't really go together. But anyway, that's part of modern society, because there's no soul, there's no ghost in the machine. We're all just chemicals. We're all just products of evolution. Actually, scientists believe they have what they call artificial intelligence, AI, artificial intelligence. They believe that the next stage of evolution has already arrived, and human beings are redundant. Human beings are emotional. They make so many mistakes. They're irrational. They're not logical in the way they do things. And computers, there's pure intelligence. You see, pure just processing of information and giving answers that are purely based on the information. Has nothing to do with all these things like compassion and love and this and that. That's all a lot of useless. Those are imperfections in the human being. So they have no problem with men destroying themselves, because computers will soon, according to them, be able to create new computers. And they'll use computers to have computer babies or something. So this is the direction in which we're going. Brave New World. Of course, you all read Brave New World, right? George Orwell's book about a society where, well, for one thing, children are created in test tubes by combining the very best semen with the very best egg, ovum, and, ruling out or filtering out all negative characteristics till we get a race of superhumans. In his book 1984, people did not have names. Names were, again, kind of silly. Everybody was a number. You were a number in a computer. And that was your identification. So this happens when we When we stop worshiping God as a person, then we depersonalize God, and then the next stage is we depersonalize ourselves. And this is what happens when we, this is the ultimate end or one of the stages of using occupational duties to produce material wealth, and then using that material wealth for sense gratification. So here it is. All occupational duties, whether it be religious activities, worship of demigods, or just our basic fruitive activities of doing our jobs, etc., working within our particular varna. You can mitigate the suffering of the material world by regulating your life. In the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, yukta hara viharasya, yukta chestasya karmasu, yukta svapna vabodasya, yogo bhavati dukaha. By regulating your eating, by regulating your sleeping, by regulating all your different activities in a very controlled way, you can actually develop strength of mind, and you can tolerate all the miseries in the material world. You can mitigate, you can do away with miseries. You can reach a stage where you're feeling very peaceful. You don't have to get into God or religion if you live a very orderly, regulated life. One of the reasons why people suffer so much at the present moment is because over the years we have become so unregulated in our activities. We eat any kind of food without looking at the ingredients, seeing if it's actually suitable for our bodies. We eat foods that have been sprayed with tons of chemicals, and you know, these chemicals are, they kill bugs, but they also kill us. And people just, they're too much in a hurry. They don't have time to check. They don't have time to read articles that describe how drinking the milk that you're drinking, the milk has been altered, the DNA molecules have been changed to produce a better, more resilient quality of milk that lasts 3 days longer or something. And the fact that you just destroyed the good quality of milk and you've created milk that may affect organs in your body, that doesn't occur to people. And we don't get time. So, if we, this has caused a lot of the problems. The way we treat the environment, no training, people just have become completely in the mode of ignorance. They go out into the wilderness, they go out into the forest, they go out into nature, and they litter. Their plastic everywhere. They get drunk and throw their bottles here and there, and they take whatever. They completely pollute the environment without thinking about it. In New York, they have been dumping their refuse, all the garbage of New York City. They've been dumping it in the ocean. They take it so many miles out, 30 miles out, and they dump it in the ocean. So they've been doing this for 100 years or more. And now they have discovered that all of this garbage, and most of it is not degradable, you know, like plastic and bottles and all that kind of stuff, it has accumulated into a huge mountain on the bottom of the ocean. And within that mountain, all the diseases that you can ever imagine are festering. And it is gradually, by the force of the tide and the ocean, it's moving back in towards New York City. And they figure by about the year 2025 or something, it will be in New York Harbor. It's moving back on them. Or nuclear waste. They bury nuclear waste here and there, and then all of a sudden it takes... they don't know how long it takes for isotopes to become totally non-toxic, but certainly for at least 50 or 100 years, men try to bury when they're used up. They bury them somewhere. They pollute the whole atmosphere where they're buried, and sometimes these toxic waste dumps leak into underground rivers that feed the water system of cities, and we just have no idea the way we're living. So the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna explains to Arjuna, if you just come to this point of regulating your activities materially, sleeping. People sleep at all crazy hours. They, more and more in Kali Yuga, people, this is the nature, it's the age of darkness. So people are up, they're awake in darkness. You know, people stay up till 2-3 o'clock in the morning. And then they sleep during Brahma Muhurta and all the way up till 9-10 o'clock or more. So they're sleeping more and more in light and being awake in the darkness, and they oftentimes we find many people have sleeping problems, and they have to take pills and so many things just to sleep. A lot of it stems from a lack of regulation. So, but that's not the solution. Because even if you create a situation where you are temporarily able to tolerate material miseries, unless your ultimate liberation is guaranteed, you're going to die and have to start all over again. Therefore, the Vedas, the Bhagavad Gita, the Srimad Bhagavatam, they aim at directing us toward the ultimate end. When we start our journey towards the absolute truth, we have to think, what is the ultimate end? We begin with the ultimate end in our minds. Where do we want to go? What do we want to achieve? Our ultimate liberation. And how will we achieve this? How will we work towards this? How much time will it take? And how will we live during the period of our attaining that goal? It'll take us a lifetime. Okay, how will we live from day to day? What is our ultimate liberation? And how will we live in such a way that we are able to achieve it? So this is Prabhupada's explaining here that material gain can enable you to fulfill desires and satisfy sense gratification. But if it is devoid of the ultimate liberation, the ultimate goal, then that is forbidden here in Srimad Bhagavatam. And the next verse describes it in a little bit more clear.
way. Are there any questions? Yeah.
What is the solution to ISKCON for the people who are in old age?
One friend
who is now in a problem because he's unable to engage in the mission.
Right.
So that's very, he's, so to say, useful. She thinks so. She feels that she's not useful for ISKCON and now nobody cares.
Right. It is really something that we ought to think about a lot and try to do something. Right now, we're socially an infant. We're not very well developed. We have a tremendous religion, but socially we need to grow. One of our problems is poverty. We don't have a lot of funds available to develop programs. So there's lots of devotional service for everyone who is capable. Older devotees now are looking towards, first of all, developing facilities for older devotees. In other words, somebody who comes to us after a lifetime of, you know, relatively sinful life, and, you know, they haven't got much energy left, and they've given all their money away to their children, and, you know, and then they come to us and say, you know, I want to surrender to Krishna, you know. And they've got all these medical problems and, you know, we're supposed to take care of them. At the present, we're kind of organized as an army, a preaching army. We've been really on that side, disseminating our literature, distributing our literature, creating propaganda. Prabhupada's vision is, of course, very great. International society. He wants to create a society. And society includes not only just full-time preachers, but it includes many different aspects. The Centennial had as one of their goals to create a welfare system for devotees, to create facilities in Vrindavan and other holy places where older people could go and retire. And it's not like being relegated to some ignominious future. Of course, that word's a mouthful, but you know this word ignominious? Something not very desirable, ignominious. So it's not like you're being sent to the pasture like some cows or something just to eat grass. You know, when a cow gets old, you send the cow to the, you don't kill the cow, but you send the cow to the pasture where they just, you know, spend their life chewing cud and, you know, whatever cows do. Simple life. But in old age, one can do a great deal. One can, of course, focus in on spiritual perfection, one's own sadhana, one's own internal development. The Mormons are a pretty good example of
a religion that engages their old people. I'm sure there are many others, but I'm just familiar with the Mormons because I studied them a little bit. And they're retired people. It's a regulative principle. They have to spend about three days a week minimum going to their Mormon center and doing volunteer service, which often includes things like giving guests or visitors to the center a tour and explaining the philosophy to them in a simple way and like that. They have a big center in Salt Lake City, and when I went there, they had dozens of people who were greeting guests, and they were all retired, older people. So if you go to a holy place, you can attend the temples for worship, Krishna Balaram Mandir, and so many pilgrims come to Vrindavan and inquire. So if you have your own little house in Vrindavan and maybe a servant to help you with, you know, whatever old age problems you may have, then you can do active preaching just by greeting the pilgrims and giving them a tour or whatever. And you can, you know, do a wonderful service. These are just, you know, some little ideas. We have our farms. Old people can go to the farms, and you know, there's many things that they can do in more developed temples. Here you know, you hardly have a building that, you know, you know you're going to be there 2 weeks from now. You know, it's moving. But I know temples where they have a lot of older retired people who run the reception, who work in the office, who do, you know, things that they could do. So, I mean, it's a question of someone championing the cause. It's a question of someone leading the way. I mean, Lokanath Maharaj and Jayashila Das and others are looking in that direction. I think it's really an important issue for many reasons.
Yeah. How was that problem really solved in Vedic times in that society?
Old age? Well, of course, in Vedic times, or in a civilized society, a person has lived a good life. So by the time they reach old age, which might be 60 or 70, they still have a degree of their health left, and they have a very respectable position in society because they have throughout their lives read the Bhagavad Gita, read Srimad Bhagavatam. They have attended the temple ceremonies. They have attended Srimad Bhagavatam class or heard lectures from different speakers. And they're very pregnant with knowledge. So they have a contribution to make to society. Whereas today, old people are seen as simply a burden. They don't you know, they've used their lives for sense gratification. And the next generation wants to use their lives for sense gratification. And old people are just a burden. At least this is a big problem in America. What happens usually, formerly, old people would stay, there would be a big family, and old people would hand over the business to the next generation at the age of 50 or so. They would live in their house with their children and grandchildren, and they would be respected and treated nicely. But nowadays we find that there are no such big families. Parents who stay with their children can often create a problem for the children, because the children want to have parties and they want to stay up late and play loud music, and you know, the parents want to get to sleep early. They don't like the loud music. They like Frank Sinatra and, you know, the soft stuff. And their cultures are different. And even otherwise, old people, you know, they can't take all the excitement and everything. So the solution is to have old age homes where you send your parents, let them be out of sight, let them die under the care of some nurses and doctors, and then I'll be free to make money and enjoy until it's my time to get old. But in Vedic times, old people were like Srila Prabhupada. He's an old man, but we worship him because he gave us something. He had problems, physical problems, so many things, but he gave us everything. So that's the difference. Training society to work together very cooperatively. The Shudras, the Vaishyas, the Kshatriyas, the Brahmanas, they're not envious of one another, but they complement one another. The old people, the middle-aged people, the young people, they all contribute. Everybody, every one of us has something about us that is unique and special. And we can contribute to the total community in a very wonderful way. We just have to agree to a common goal. And everybody's contribution is valuable. Okay, our common goal today is a picnic. So I think we all have to get working, because we have to leave about 10 or 10:30 or so. So there's, who's, yes, Commander in Chief.
I'd like to say something. Я в Наслан Ласвик, а вы можете, да, полезете свой кондурец. я щось ще хочу підчасти. Я не спомнила мене підпласти і в чашу. Та нюри в чашу. А Дана та кондорочка ту вани, а хоче підпрати свої танюри в чаші, де все обмила, перед руки, перед уста. І далі де ту вани, не хочу вам показувати, на ту вани. Ево, ми нам це показувати вам. Не можу бути просто вчинити, ми маємо цистерну, не готовлену воду, і вона також ще нам помочь, то у воду видавимо. Далі нам і далі, то не падне тиша. Робить, коли ту стану будемо і далі нас вижити.
Можемо і скопати бунар, я не
Posle bi možda prevođena osoba da kuha čaj, jedna da pomogne pripremati sendviče, jedna da može Sebastian da završi kitri i još možda dvije da nam pomogne da spremimo sve to što je prema mogli, pa posle se može to prijaviti.
Koliko je posla znači sve ukupno?
Jedna za sendviče, jedna za čaj, Sebastian za kitri, jedna za Sebastian na četiri osobe.
What did you say?
I said that I would like, I would ask them to bring some plates or something from some provision.
Some plates.
Plates of each of them. Yeah. Each of them brings his own plate or something. From which he can decorate them. Then I
can't just buy some paper plates?
I don't know if you can buy them now because it's small rich. The first thing is open on Sunday.
Okay.
And then I show them where they can wash the hands and mouth after prashadam so that they come to the...
Oh, you mean right now, here?
Yeah,
for breakfast.
After breakfast.
Oh, okay.
I asked this for some help afterwards to prepare it for.
Okay, how many people do you want?
I asked for four.
Okay, so one, two.
He's already doing it. He's already doing it. He's already finishing kitchen.
So okay, who's going to...
I need one for help making sandwiches.
Okay.
One for sandwiches.
Volunteer.
Volunteer to help.
Okay, so Tina, you volunteer to make sandwiches. And what else you need a volunteer for?
Making tea.
Sabina, you'll volunteer to make tea.
No, Sabina, I will need her to for your prashadam.
Oh, okay.
Somebody else.
Okay, Zenka, you volunteer for tea.
For tea? And two others to help just to prepare, to bring everything together, put in the cars and...
Sonia, what do you volunteer for? Okay.
He wants to do that also.
Okay. Okay, fine. All right.
So we are here ready also.
Okay, we better take prasadam quickly then, now, and then get ready to go.